Gazette online, and this is the Monday evening edition of GS Radio. We're waiting for our guest to call in. Jeff Mayer will be joining us this evening to continue his conversation about his battle with the IRS and now with the courts. This should be very interesting, and so hopefully Jeff will be here shortly. In the meantime, there's a few things we can talk about. One is the upcoming presidential election. As many people have noted, while they argue about foreign policy, the economy, and make promises they have no intentions of keeping, not one of the two major candidates has said one word about the TSA, about the NDAA, about the disappearing of our veterans across the country, as someone is scooping them up and they're not to be seen again. Nobody knows what's happening to them. If any of you have followed our Sunday night shows, you know that we deal with guardianship, and on those shows we discuss this very thing, the kidnapping, the imprisonment, isolation, and then looting of the estate of elderly individuals or disabled adults who have trust funds or whose cash value in the system is huge. Many of these people get disability, and they should, but that isn't all. Once inside a residential facility and under the care of a so-called guardian, they're now available for state funds, federal funds, grants, subsidies, all sorts of things. So one individual in one of these institutions can be worth an absolute fortune. This has gone on, and we have yet to be able to get one state senator, representative, or federal representative or senator to openly address this problem. While we've looked at several things that have gone on, what we have found is that no one is willing to talk about this. And what I'm trying to figure out is why this is such a lucrative business. We have predatory guardians that some years ago, maybe as little as 5 years ago, were in bankruptcy, who are now multimillionaires, and the only thing they show as a source of income is the predatory guardianship. Yes. Can you hold, please? We're going to take a break here, and while I try to get things sorted out with our guest. So if you'll just hold on.
Is your privacy important to you? Is having all of your assets well organized one of your priorities? Do you wonder if your business and personal estate will be protected for your family and not taken away by government bureaucracies? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then now's the time to find out about Freedom Bound International's Pure Trust. A pure trust organization is protected by the Constitution and is not subject to government regulation. Property held in a pure trust is free from liens, levies, or other actions filed against you. You can find out more about Freedom Bound International's Pure Trust and schedule a trust consultation simply by calling toll-free 1-888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-3733 or log on to www.freedomradio.us. Call us now for information and to schedule a trust consultation. 888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-3733 or online at www.freedomradio.us.
Our guest just called on our landline here, and he apparently is unable to get through on the switchboard. He's going to try again. So hopefully Jeff can get connected and we can go. I don't see him coming up just yet. I don't know what the problem is here. Everything looks like it's working appropriately. This is just infuriating. There's still nothing up. I don't see anything coming up on the board at all. Apparently he's still trying to call in. Well, we'll go on talking then until hopefully he can get connected. What we were talking about was guardianship abuse. This, of course, has been brought to the attention of Washington officials for several years now. Nobody will do anything. The President of the United States has been contacted about this, including his wife. They will not respond. This is such a lucrative business. And neither one of course, these two leading candidates are discussing this. But I noticed, too, that even the third-party candidates are not addressing TSA and DAA or Homeland Security's classifying our returning veterans as possible terrorists because of their training, what they've witnessed, what we've forced them to endure, shocks to the system, all of it. And nothing has been said about that. Nothing has been said by any candidate of any party about this massive expansion of Homeland Security. And for those of you who are a little misguided in this, Homeland Security does not exist to keep the homeland safe from terrorists. It exists to keep the government safe from you. Everything that Homeland Security does is geared towards the population of the United States. They have constructed blacklists, no-fly lists, suspect lists, possible suspect lists, watch lists, lists of all kinds. They have more than 6 million people on these lists for no other reason than you may have commented somewhere or spoken somewhere, written something, and disagreed with the government. Of course, if you believe in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, that also makes you a suspected terrorist. Now, that's our own supposed government saying that. I think we're in pretty deep doo-doo when our own government comes out and declares our belief and wanting the affirmation of our Constitution and our common law and civil law, our rights protected, that declares us to be a possible terrorist. And, of course, they lump us in with extremist groups and everything else, and we've got the Southern Poverty Lie Center that, of course, spins propaganda. I'd like to know any other organization that is allowed to construct hit lists and put people's names on it for no other reason than they suspect that they are terrorists. I just think it is such a sad state of affairs when our own government cannot tolerate dissent, when the lies have become so egregious and so terrible that we can't abide it anymore, and they take all of their force and begin moving against us. Most recently, you saw our government buying, four billion rounds of hollow blank shells. And I'll ask you again, who is it you think they intend to use these on? Their excuse was they were going to do target practicing. They just didn't say what the target was. If someone calculated out, that's enough for 5 rounds in every man, woman, and child in the country. Now, if you think that they have assembled this arsenal because some mad terrorist in a cave somewhere in Afghanistan is plotting on how to contaminate a cornfield, you're sadly mistaken. They really don't give a damn. What they are concerned about is the civil unrest. The whole country is becoming increasingly agitated and appalled at what's happening in our government. And the discontent is massive. And somebody is dinging the heck out of my phone. And so here we sit with this monstrosity in D.C., the Homeland Security Department, that name alone gives me the screaming creeps. But we sit with this monstrosity, and it's growing bigger by the day. The federal government is now the largest employer in the country with 2.3 million employees. This isn't a government. This is a corporation. And it was incorporated in 1871. And people hear hollering about executive orders. There's no constitutional authority for executive orders, and that's absolutely correct. There is not. But we do not elect presidents. We have not since 1871. We elect the chief executive of the corporation. Okay. A message from Jeff is he's still trying. He's just going to keep trying to call in, and hopefully we can get him hooked up. But anyway, so what we have here is this catastrophe that's building and it's brewing, and yet nobody will address it. Nobody will speak openly about it. Nobody will say anything. People have actually become afraid of our government. Like I say, it's a corporation. Executive orders are not constitutional. If you were the president of the United States, but if you were acting as the CEO of the corporation, it's quite all right. And this is how we have been swindled. And this swindling has continued for quite some time. Most people won't believe, even though several law sites list the incorporation, the federal government is listed as the youth. And I think we got Jeff. Hold on. Jeff, is that you?
I can't believe it, but I finally made it. I talk about interference.
Yeah, I'm telling you, and I think that was intentional. We've run into this before when we've had some real hot topics on here, Jeff. For some reason, people can't get on. They can't get in the chat room. Nobody can connect. This isn't the first time this has happened. But I figured if I rattled on long enough, eventually, if you kept trying, you'd get in. So welcome to the show, Jeff, and thanks for all your efforts.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. It's all, you know, we're all little cogs, but, you know, when you put a few million or 10 million or 100 million little cogs together, you know, you can, like they say, if you give me a lever long enough, I can move the earth. So, you know, and we're all in this together. So here I am.
Jeff, just for people, I'm already getting emails from people that they can't get in the chat room, and I'm so sorry about that. I don't know what that chronic problem is. But I've got about 30 emails so far of people who are listening, wanted you to know they're listening, but they can't get in the chat room. But, Jeff, for anybody who's new to this that didn't possibly maybe hear your first interview, you want to give a little bit of background and update everybody on what happened here and what got you to where you are now?
Short story is IRS got challenged on, you know, the IRS law. And somebody said, well, you know, do you know what the law says? I mean, when we're in driver's ed, you know, we get a driver's ed book, and it says this and says this and says this, and it's all laid out, and here's the laws, here's it is. All of a sudden, you know, somebody says, well, how do you know that you lawfully, legally, constitutionally are required to pay income taxes? Because they say, you know, the two most absolute things are death and taxes. And it's like, okay. And I'm never one to back down from a challenge. And so I started looking into it and realizing that, well, wait a minute, this isn't adding up. And when you go into the Supreme Court cases, you go into the IRS code itself, you go into a lot of the lower courts rulings and stuff like that, and you start to see a conundrum of confusion. But when you go back to original intent of our Constitution, our founding fathers, even, you know, back as early as 100 years ago, or as late as 100 years ago, that there's things that didn't add up. And when I started piecing it together like a jigsaw puzzle, because that's what it is, and that's exactly the way they love it, to keep people confused, it started to paint a picture that, well, wait a minute, this is totally different than what they've been teaching us and teaching my parents and my grandparents for 100 years. And so I started challenging it and not getting answers, and over the course of 10 years ended up in seven courts trying to quash some of the IRS's challenges, and then in the tax court, and then into the appeals court on the same topic, and every one of them completely ignored everything. They ignored standing, which means Do they have a right to be doing what they're doing? Courts ignored it, and they're required by law to prove it. So it basically ended up to where, you know, all these courts didn't pay any attention at all to their own rules and their own laws, and I simply went into, the next avenue, which was the United States Supreme Court, and filed a case, basically the same case. The Supreme Court's a little different than a lot of the other courts out there, but in any case, I filed it, and they basically they had a hearing. They put it on the docket. They had what they call a conference last Friday to look at the case, and I filed what's called in forma pauperis, meaning I don't have money, and it's I can't afford to pay this for this case, and they can waive that, and they can simply accept it. But then today, it came across, which I just got, and I didn't mention to the previous, obviously, audience, but the motion was for the in forma pauperis was denied, I'm not ashamed of it. I'm a disabled veteran, but, I'm under the poverty level. And they still denied it, but I think because of the weight of what I'm trying to bring before them, so I have to not only come up with a $350 to pay for the docket fee, but it automatically goes back from the in forma pauperis ruling, which is basically if somebody comes in as a pro se, that means you're coming in under your own. You don't have an attorney. You don't have all these fancy lawyers. You don't have a lot of big bucks. But they're forcing me back into that realm, which is going to be, as of today, I've got about 3 weeks to come with an answer, and we're working on that. But, the criteria is that I actually have to I have to completely go back to my writ that I filed with them and reformat it and change it, because I have to have less words and less documentation, and it has to be in a book form, literally a book form, not just a document with a staple in it. It has to be hardbound on the binding. It has to be a completely weird size. It has to be colored paper on some of the pages. It's like so many hoops that, somebody like me, pro se, simply on my own, which I have a right to do, they make it extremely hard. So that's where I am right about now as far as my case. I did talk with somebody today, which was fortuitous, I believe, and he's got some really good, powerful stuff that I can use and send to the court to try to open these doors again without all this, falderol and baloney that they like to put up for smoke screens and blocks and what have you. So that's where I am as far as this particular case itself.
Jeff, when we talked earlier, I told you that on Sunday nights, of course, we deal with guardianship abuse, and many people in that arena all across the country are working pro se. You simply cannot afford these attorneys, and many times, I would say a good 8 times out of 10, they're not going to deliver anyway at the last minute. They bail out, or they simply just fail to represent you. We've seen this happen so many times, it's just disgusting. But this, what you're talking about is a system of smoke and mirrors, like you say. It's a system of trickery. It's meant to keep you out of that court. It's meant to keep that court inaccessible to you as a private citizen. And that keeps the closed union shop, the bar association, in control of things. This idea that things have to be on colored paper, hardbound, special format, this and that. This is all for one reason and one reason only, to make it so complicated, so complex, that should you have an adequate case, which I believe you do, they can dismiss it on a technicality, well, you didn't dot this I. The paper was too yellow. It wasn't yellow enough. It was a half inch too big. So we dismissed the whole case, and we did it with prejudice so that you can't come back again. And
right.
There's, we've seen this happen many, many times, these courtrooms. For one thing, I want to ask you something, Jeff. Where do they get the right to haul you into a tax court?
Well, unfortunately, due process means that you have the right. Doesn't matter. You don't need an attorney. You are a sovereign, living blood human being. We all have the right to our day in court. The problem is that they have us in a catch-22 is what it is. It's they do their thing, and then it places us to the point where the only choice that we have is to file a suit in tax court, and which is where we are the ones bringing ourselves under their jurisdiction because due process has been denied. Like, I had seven cases in seven different states in seven different federal courts against the IRS to begin this whole thing. And like I said, they ignored the whole thing. But I have to pursue this because they have been denying me due process, which means, due process simply means, the simplest term is you have a right to bring all your evidence, all of your witnesses, everything into to defend your position, and they're denying it. And then they force you to go into tax court, which is basically you're stating, I am coming before you, giving you jurisdiction over my case, and that gets into a whole nother conundrum of jurisdiction and sovereignty of not only the states but individuals, all of us. We have a sovereignty that we don't understand and that we don't realize what we can do to simply hold it, stop, file a simple form, make a few statements, and force them back into their compliance with their own rules and their own laws. So it isn't an issue of them forcing us into tax court. Well, it is, but it's when we do that, We are basically, in a certain way, acquiescing and saying, okay, you guys, your realm, your system, your laws, all of this type of stuff, I am acquiescing that you have control over me. And that's where they catch us. And I don't remember if I even mentioned, I can't remember how many people I talked to today already on this subject, but talked with a gentleman today who has, you know, 30 years of experience in dealing with these things, and he says it boils down to some very, very simple things, and that is, where is the authority for anybody, the IRS, the Federal Reserve, the government, any element of the government, to have authority over each one of us as an individual? And it does not exist. It's non-existent, and they cannot prove it. But the problem is that all of us as individuals have been roped into the same pool, and we are simply being we are not exercising our authority to stand up and say, wait a minute, the government, we created you. You didn't create us. The creator is not under the created, and we created you, so this guy has found the laws, found the constitutional elements, found the case law, found all of the facts, and basically, you know, I'm probably going to be working with him here in the next week or so to present some very powerful documentation that any one of us can do. And it's not, you know, I'm not a lawyer, I can't do this, I can't write 40 pages. No, it's like one or two pages of simple documentation, and you just say, nope, you need to prove this. If you can't prove it, well, guess what? And we have to take... Go ahead.
Go ahead, Jeff. Well, I was going to say, can you use a notice of intent where you create an estoppel? In other words, you write and say them. Do you know, one of the things would be a question possibly could be, do you agree that there exists no law or statute giving you the authority to levy taxes on me? Agree or disagree? And, you know, you go down through this. Silence, of course, is construed as acquiescence. If they have however many days you want to give them to respond, the minimum is usually 10. If they respond, if they lie on that, it's the same thing as perjury in court. So they can't come back and say, oh, yeah, there is a law. We can't find it. We don't know where it is. We misplaced it, but we know there is one. In other words, they can't lie on this document, and they must respond to you. Has this ever been a possibility?
Well, a lot of people, you know, over the years have tried to use that approach, and very limited success, because when we do that, we still have our foot. You know, it's like Microsoft comes and forces you, and you don't realize it, to be an employee for them. And they have all these rules and all these laws and everything, and yet they're saying you have to do this because you're one of our employees. You don't understand that, and you've got all these rules and everything. But when we continue to play their game, we still have our foot in the door. We still have our foot in their door, and they say, ah, your foot's in our door. We still have jurisdiction. We still have the authority. We're the boss, and you're complying because you still have your foot in our door. And that's what this gentleman I talked with today said. We have to, and I've understood that on other levels, we have to, especially on the IRS level, we have to completely divorce ourselves from the entire system. 1040 forms, that's, we're simply stating, okay, I am under perjury, I am stating that that I have income, which 99% of the people filing 1040 forms do not have, and that I am a government employee. Well, everyone filing a 1040 form is committing perjury, and we're still playing their game. We have to stop and say, wait a minute, Microsoft, I've been working for you for all these years. A federal government is a corporation. It is a federal, for money, for-profit corporation, and they have us roped into it, and we just have to say, wait a minute, I quit. I'm out of this. I don't want to do it anymore. I'm not going to do it anymore, and you can't make me do it anymore. And that's the awakening that has to come across this country, is that people have to understand that we have been enslaved, and that we are willfully, well, maybe not so willfully, but willingly, under ignorance, complying with 60 million statutory laws out there that have been created for a very small segment of the government itself. It doesn't have anything to do with sovereign American citizens or state citizens, and it's the state governments, not the state government, but the state constitution is our relationship between us and the federal government. The federal government, the federal constitution, all that are different. And it's a convoluted mess that these guys have created, but we can't play their game. We can. I've been doing it. I've been trying to do it with these courts because I am bringing it to the nth degree to where, and in the Supreme Court, when you take the facts and the laws and you shove it in their face and you show that these guys, even by their own laws, and even by their own statutes and by their own code and by their own procedures, they are derelict. They have violated their own laws. I'm doing that because I'm trying to, you know, make it as obvious as possible, because once it's in their face, they have no excuse. And if they continue to refuse to look at the laws and look at the facts and deny it, well then, you know, it brings us to a crossroads where, you know, there's not a lot of things that can happen. Either they say, okay, which I'm hoping is going to happen with the Supreme Court case and what we're going to file with them, which is some pretty heavy documents, which we can certainly provide you and provide anybody listening. that, and it's very simple stuff. It's ABC123. It's just simply asking, where is the authority for you to be doing what you're doing against me? That's it. And they don't have it.
Exactly. I tried to explain to someone the other day that the IRS, the federal IRS, is actually the enforcement arm of the International Monetary Fund, and it is not part of our government. Its main office is, its head office is in Puerto Rico, and according to code, that whoever is the head of the IRS is whoever is currently the secretary in Puerto Rico at that time. And when you talk about the W-2 forms, people don't know. I didn't know till about 2 years ago. You're not compelled to fill out that W-2 form.
No.
There's nothing that says you have to fill that out and hand that to an employer. Basically, what you're doing when you do that is agreeing to allow them to hijack part of your paycheck and to report to them. Yeah.
And there's code. There is actual code for employers, employees, because it's a voluntary thing. If an employee wants to do that, it is voluntary. They volunteer for it. They do it. And it says in there very clearly, and that's on one of my websites, that all you have to do is you take the code and file a form that states, I no longer want to be, I'm not volunteering anymore, I'm not doing this, and it's not law, you don't have to do it. If any employer out there that says that you have to do it, they're lying, and they can be sued for violating your civil rights and forcing you to do it, or firing you, or whatever it might be. But there are some simple documents. The code itself shows that it's voluntary, and you just simply say, nope, I don't want any money taken out again. But the caveat there is, unless you're willing to go to the nth degree to say, okay, you can do that and you have more money at the end of the year, you know, in your paycheck, you might have a 20 or 30% pay increase, but unless you realize that you need to take yourself completely out of the system and that I'm not playing your game anymore by filing simple letters like states, ask the IRS, well, show me in the code, the IR code, where it makes me personally liable to file a 1040 form on what you claim is my income. That's a simple question. Number two is you ask them to define legally, lawfully, what is income. And income, as we talked about the last time, is not wages, salary, or compensation. When you get a paycheck at the end of the week or the month from your employer, or the person you're working for, that is not income. Income is what comes from a corporate profit after all expenses, or you got $20 million sitting in a bank account and it's making interest. Well, the interest that comes off of that, that is what is income. It has nothing to do with your wages. Does it cost anybody that's listening any money at all to end up at their employer's doorstep? Do they have to eat? Well, yeah. Do they have to drive there? Yeah. Do they have to buy a car? Yes. Do they have to have insurance for the car? Yes. All these expenses that any other corporation has that they can deduct and take off because it's not income. But once you've paid all of your expenses, including recreation, including anything that's related to survival, and even more than that, just life, that's all expenses for you to be able to be at that doorstep to ask to agree with your employer to state, okay, you want to hire me to do XYZ, and you're going to pay me $10 an hour, $15 an hour, $20, $30, $50 an hour, doesn't matter what it is, then I agree to that. So what you're doing is that you are exchanging your labor for what they are willing to pay for. It's an exchange. There's no profit in the exchange. Your labor is worth $50 an hour, $20, $5 an hour, doesn't matter. Then you're getting that back, and it's a perfect exchange. That's not income. That is not profit. You have not profited anything because it's an even exchange. Believe me, the web that these guys have woven to confuse us and to confound us and to, you know, create fear in us is huge. But what it takes is that we have to get away from this crazy, confusing, convoluted mess and get back to kindergarten. ABC,
yes.
1, 2, 3. What does the law say? What does the Constitution say? What does the code say? What are these guys trying to tell me? And then we have to, as a people, as human beings, remember who we are. And that is, we are the boss. They are the servants. And they cannot tell us to do something. They don't have the authority to do it.
You know, I think one of the things that it really always bothers me, no matter what issue you're dealing with when it comes to government and government employees, is that too many of these people come to relish the idea of being able to harass and intimidate and threaten and lie and cheat all under the guise of doing their job. I just think it's a strange thing in human nature that you can take ordinary individuals who might on a day-to-day basis be one of the nicest people you ever met, be a good family member, good neighbor, whatever, but you give them one of these jobs, they get their nose wide open, and I'm telling you, they turn into psychopaths. I swear they do. We had talked the last time you were on, Jeff, about different court cases, and the one in particular where the judge instructed the jury. And as I said at the time, no judge has the right to instruct any jury. That is not his job. He cannot tell them what they can rule on, what their ruling is. He cannot do anything. The other thing that he can't do is, not lawfully anyway, is set aside a jury verdict. But we have judges doing this all the time. They don't get what they coached the jury to do. They set aside the jury verdict. What has happened in response to all of that, and like I say, I'll go back to that case we talked about where the jurors sent a note out to the judge, and this was in an IRS case, sent a note out to the judge saying, please supply us with a copy of the law, the underlying law that's the basis for what we're doing to this man. And the judge sent a note back saying, you have everything you need. In other words, I can't produce that, but I told you what you can and can't do, and that's all you better do. Well, they came back with a not guilty verdict, which they should have. But what we're seeing happen across the country, Jeff, now is jury nullification. People have realized that the power of that jury is far greater than the power of that judge or those ranting, raving attorneys. And they are nullifying the underlying basis for the case before them, saying that the law is illegitimate, and I'm wondering when this is finally going to be extended to the IRS. With jury nullification, I know there's talk in D.C. right now, I call it the District of Criminals, there's some things being kicked around there to the effect of outlawing jury nullification. And our courts right now are so corrupt. They are so corrupt that you're taking your life in your hands going into any one of them. If you think you're going to get justice from any of our courts, you're sadly mistaken. If you've got one good judge out of 10,000, you've hit the jackpot. We hear complaints from all over the country about the corruption in the courts. Do you think, Jeff, do you think at any time there will ever be a movement to stop this deal with the IRS, to stop this hijacking of income and this terrorizing of people's lives? One of the things, and maybe you can speak to this, I've noticed these commercials on TV for various companies that if, the IRS is after you, and they settled for maybe 10 cents or a quarter on the dollar, and that's all they had to pay. Well, if that's the case, then how could the tax be legitimate to begin with? If you could bargain with them and ratchet down the what I consider blackmail money that you have to pay them, how legitimate can the underlying premise be? Well,
I just
don't get that.
Yeah, you've touched on, you know, quite a few different things. The last thing you mentioned, that's exactly right. Anybody that, we are presuming that the government functions on law. And law states A means A, and if you don't do A, you have violated the law. Well, if there are these groups out there which are making money by doing what you said, getting these poor people that are in over their heads or in trouble or whatever, and, you know, obviously they're making money off of this, settling for, could be 10 cents, could be 5 cents, could be, I mean, I've known of you know, some people that have had, you know, $500,000 of tax, past taxes, and they settle for 50,000, you know, or 20,000, or, I mean, it's all over the gamut. It depends on who's doing what, but
yeah.
That is a good question is, wait a minute, why would the IRS, if it's a legal absolute thing and they can go after me and get $500,000 of taxes, why would they settle for this amount of money? Because it's a game to them. They're playing a game. They're sucking any point that they can stick their fangs into people and suck out. It doesn't matter if it's a, you know, big bloated, you know, thing that they could just really milk till the nth degree, or if it's just a little widow, you know, barely surviving, and they settle for $5,000. Oh, we'll take it. Okay, we'll take it, and we'll just walk on. That's all they are. They're predators. It's a pathetic thing. The jury nullification issue is an issue of education. Most of us, and me included, I'm as guilty as anybody on the planet, or at least in the country, as far as understanding what my rights are and what we've been intimidated. You know, you walk in, you're in a jury. If anybody's ever, anybody out there, if they've never gone to a court, and just, you can go in there, any court, virtually, well, 99.999% of courts out there, you have the right to go in there, sit down, open up your pad and paper, and or your pen and paper, and just look at the judge. Just sit there, look at him, look at the jury, listen to what's going on. Even in the common things, even in traffic cases or something like that, and listen to what's going on, and document it, and realize that. Most of what takes place in most courts in virtually every county of this republic is in violation of law. And when they, like you said, when a judge gives instruction to the jury and states that you know, so many things, or says that you have to find somebody guilty of something. You know, like, I'll use, and this is the simplest of examples. Somebody is driving without a seatbelt. In Colorado, it's a law. If you don't have your seatbelt on, you can get a ticket for it. They can't stop you if that's the only thing that they see. They have to, and they always do, dream up some other little, well, you didn't use your signal, or you didn't come to a complete stop, or your taillight your license plate light was out, or whatever. They'll dream up something and stop you, and then cite you for it. And then, you know, it's like, what do most of us do? It's like, okay, let's see, it's a $50, $75 fee. If I want to fight this, then it's more time off work, more hassle, more headache. They keep the fines low enough to where, you know, it's, you know, I will pay this because I just don't have the time. I don't want to hassle with it. And they know that. 99% of us are going to do that. But if people out there who get on juries, and most people, unfortunately, really do everything they can in their power to escape jury duty, but they don't realize that that's the highest power. That's the check and balance against
yes.
corrupt government. And so people have to understand that the case that you brought up with the jury that went back to the judge and said, well, you know, the whole case hinges on the fact that his name is Woody Harrell. It was an Illinois case. It stated, you know, he said, well, there's no law that makes me personally liable in the Internal Revenue Code, IR code book, to file a 1040 form. And the jury went back and said, well, okay, I guess what it boils down to is this is the question. We need to see the law. Show us the law. And the judge said, you have what you need. And they just said, well, I guess we don't. And they acquitted him completely. And that's the power. It doesn't matter. It could be the most vicious, you know, it doesn't matter. Whatever the case is, if somebody, a jurist, they can vote their conscience. They can look at this and they can say, okay, what's going on here? Is this, okay, he wasn't wearing a seatbelt. And say I wasn't, I'm standing there before you, and I wasn't wearing a seatbelt, but they want to convict me and they want to charge me and they want to suck money out of me. The jury can say, that's stupid. He might be stupid for not wearing a seatbelt. I wear a seatbelt. I do it just because I choose to do it. I don't do it because the law says, hey, guess what? You've got to do it. So the jury can nullify even a law. They have the right to judge not just the facts, which is what the courts try to tell people. You look at the facts and you judge on the facts, but I will tell you what the law says. And if the facts are there or not there, but the law says ABC, you know, you weren't wearing your seatbelt, the people can say, you know what, that's a stupid law, I don't like it, it's no good, you know, then we find him not guilty. And, you know, the case I like to bring up all the time is Simpsons, back in L.A. That was a jury nullification, if there's ever been one. It was totally corrupt, it was totally perverted, but it was a jury nullification, and that ended the whole thing. So people have to understand that when they go into that courtroom and they are in that jury box, they are above the judge. The judge is just simply there to make sure that the order goes by and that the court rules and procedures are there. But we have completely lost track of the fact, and we've thought, oh, the judge, oh, he's the big honcho, and he's this great, you know, warrior. No, we, the people sitting in that jury box, are the deciders of the law and the facts, and can simply say, you know what, that law is pathetic. He had an ounce of marijuana on him, and he wasn't selling, he wasn't doing anything, he just happened to have it in there, or somebody else happened to have it in there and drop it in his vehicle, and he gets charged for it. You know, people can look at that and say, you know, come on, you know, is this serious enough? They're sucking money out of us with 60 million statutory laws meant to bleed us dry. And we have to wake up to who we are, who the boss is, who the servant is. That's just the simplest way I can put it. There is anybody wanting to know about the jury nullification, FIJA, F as in Frank, I as in Indigo, J as in Jack, and A as in Apple, .org. That is an organization completely devoted to educating people on jury nullification and on jury duty, and understanding that we have. It's not just, well, it's an idea. If the courts have supported it for decades, there is court precedent that proves that you can walk in and you can hold that up and say, but, you know, any court that you're a jury on, that's probably not the best way. You want to try to play it as low-key as possible so you can be accepted into that jury, because all it takes is, in most cases, one person to say, no, you know, and to bring up that concept of jury nullification in your notes, and you got it, and you open it up, and you tell the people around you to say, do you really, in your conscience, in your heart, believe that this is right, that this is true? Because most of them are brainwashed into thinking, well, this is what the law says, that's what the statutory law says. Well, wait a minute, you know, you're the king, and you're letting a peasant tell you what the law is and what should be and should not be. That's ridiculous.
Well, you know, one of the things they're doing, I know they're doing it a great deal here in Minnesota, especially if it's what they call a criminal case. And if the person won't plea bargain, if they refuse to plea bargain, the offer there is, of course, you just plead guilty to this and say you did it, whether you did or you didn't. We don't care. We said you did. And if you'll just take the plea bargain, you'll only get 5 years. But if you demand a jury trial, which you have a right to, well, then we're going to make sure you lose. And not only are you going to lose, then we're going to give you 25 years. And so there, people are actually being blackmailed. This has happened numerous times here. Because, for one thing, the prosecutor wants a win, and this is considered a win. The state doesn't want to spend the money on the jury trial and take a chance on losing. And so they threaten the person, well, if you do it our way, you get 5 years. If you do it your way and demand a jury trial, then you're going to get 25 years. And I think this ought to be outlawed and be illegal. If the crime is only worth 5 years on a plea bargain, it's only worth 5 years. End of story.
Well, that's exactly right.
Go ahead.
Well, that's exactly right. It is illegal and it's unconstitutional. You cannot, if there is a criminal charge to somebody that the statutes say it's 20 years and that's what it is. They cannot, because when they go in and they state, okay, the law says it's 20 years, too bad. But they say, but, you know, if you do this, if you do that, if you dance and sing and do hula hoops and, you know, do some flips for us and we like it, and then we're going to reduce it to this. That's illegal, because right there they are violating the law, the very statutes that have been mm-hmm. set in place. They don't have the authority to do that.
Just
and that's
one
the
of the
thing
things
that you brought up.
Go ahead. One of the things that always crosses my mind on this stuff is why the citizens don't demand a cleaning up of all these statutes. Basically, we cannot breathe now without causing an infraction of some statute or code that was arbitrarily created simply just in case they might need it at some point in time to persecute you with. You just virtually can't do anything. Like you say, there's millions of pages of code and statute and titles and this and that and something else, and none of it has anything to do with the Constitution or your civil rights. And why we allow this to happen is beyond me. Why we allow... I remember when Ashcroft was, during Bush's first term, was Attorney General, and he handed down to the states sentencing guidelines. He had no authority to do that. Absolutely none. And yet the states all accepted it, and I find out later on that this is based on they're planning on this big jump in corporate prisons. And so they have to guarantee X amount of people and promise they're going to be there X amount of days, and then the federal money starts coming in, the state money starts coming in, and they can work these people as slave labor. We've seen that. I mean, even C-SPAN or CNN has covered that. But we do these things, and nobody says anything. And like I say, here we had an attorney general who arbitrarily came out and said, well, if you know, you didn't wear your seatbelt, this is what you have to have. This is the time you're going to serve. And I'm just using that euphemistically. Okay, now here's the thing. There is a system in place through law enforcement that every law enforcement agency in the country is using. It's a coded system. So the seatbelt you're talking about, if you get stopped for no seatbelt, it has a code assigned to that. And that code is worth X amount of dollars. It'll tell them what it's going to cost. If you have to, if let's say you do get convicted or, you know, arrested for a criminal, you know, a felony, the bondsman, right down through the judge and the attorneys, everybody's making money, everybody. And then if you're sent to prison, the money mill is just massive. But everything has a dollar amount attached to it. And we have these courts like family court, probate court. We have these tax courts. We've got the vaccine liability court. Are any of these constitutional? Are any of them?
Well, no. Well, it depends on which constitution you're talking about, and that's that gets into a whole other paradigm of things, is that in 1871, after the Civil War, the United States, what we consider it, if you know, walk to any you know, person on the street and ask, tell me, what is the United States? Well, it's a country, it's blah, blah, blah. Well, there are two United States. There is a United States, which in 1871 became a federal corporation, and in 1878, with the 14th Amendment, it roped into this federal corporation every citizen in every state across the board. It originally was, the 14th Amendment was originally designed to give citizenship to the slaves, because they were not born, they were not naturalized, they didn't have anything to do with citizenship of this country. And they said, well, we've got to get them, we've got to protect them, because they were being mistreated, obviously, in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways, they weren't. They had it pretty good in quite a few places, if people want to go into the history of that. But in some places, they didn't. But they did not have a citizenship, because they were not naturally born citizens. And when they created the 14th Amendment, that was the specific point of the 14th Amendment. But by that process, within a few years, it wasn't too many years, all of a sudden, everybody else in all born and naturalized and that was, you know, real citizens of the various states, all of a sudden became citizens, like it says in the 14th Amendment, if you read it, that they are now citizens of the United States and of the states wherein they reside. So it's all of a sudden it took you and me and anybody else, our forefathers and what have you, and took them from being just a simple state sovereign citizen free of the federal government and made them into a federal citizen. And by that very thing, when you're a federal citizen and when you're a federal anything, it doesn't matter what it is, when the states accept federal money, when they accept federal jurisdiction, they are saying, okay, we want this money. Yes, we want this. Yes, we want that. Yes, we'll do this. There's strings attached. And when those strings are there, the strings, guess what, is the IRS, the FBI, the CIA, all of these other organizations. They have almost zero jurisdiction in all the states of this, all the 50 states right now. They have almost zero jurisdiction. It's very limited. There's 18 enumerated authorities or powers that the federal government has, and I guarantee you it does not include the IRS or any of these other things. And so they have, when they created that federal citizenship, they started to say, okay, we've got to control the citizenship. So what better way than to create statutes that, okay, do this, do this, do this, don't do that, blah, 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 60 million or more. There's more than that right now on the books. And I guarantee you that probably 99% of us on any given day out in this world, we have violated civilly or even criminally one of those statutes, and they have that's their slate. That's the ball and chain. It's the the chains on our ankles, around our neck, and we think we're free, but we're not free. The statute for driving, you have to have a driver's license. You can't drive without a driver's license, and blah 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 blah. Well, guess what? That is illegal. The right to travel in this country is a free right. It cannot be, and the courts have supported this in the past, original intent. We have forgotten. It has supported the fact that we can travel anywhere in any 50 of the states without a license. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, well, we want some idiot who doesn't know how to drive or can't drive. No, there's competency. That's fine. Can you drive? Fine. Okay. Have a nice life. Go on. The cop can't say, do you have a driver's license? Well, no, I don't. Oh, well, okay, it's going to cost you money. Well, too bad. That's baloney. That's one of the statutory laws that they've created to enslave us, and we have to understand the element of we have to divorce ourselves from this corporation that we have willingly, willfully embraced in everything from, you know, not just driver's license. And by the way, in, for instance, the state of Colorado, if you look into the statutes, the only code that exists in Colorado Department of Revenue or the driver's license center is on commercial drivers, and that is where the term driver comes from. If you are designated as a driver, you are doing it for commercial purposes on public roads. And if you're doing it on commercial purposes on public roads, that is a taxable event and a controllable event, and you have to be licensed in order to do it. If you're a citizen going from your house to the grocery store, to the post office, to the bank, to the library, to your neighbor's house, guess what? That cannot, and the courts have upheld it, cannot, at least in the past they have. But we've forgotten. We have gone to sleep as a people. And we have to get away from this, accepting of federal benefits. And basically, we are willingly saying, okay, yeah, I want to pay taxes. I want to do this. I want to do that. And but I don't have to, but I'm going to do it because we've been told that, well, you have to do it. And we're the boss. Well, you're not the boss. And you mentioned the people in prison. We have more people in prison per capita than any other nation on planet Earth. And the reason is that, say you get indicted, you get thrown into prison. Well, there is a bond. There is a financial instrument that is created when you go to prison. And that financial bond becomes, it's a negotiable instrument that can go into the financial market, which is a huge, incredibly huge fraud on all of us internationally, not just in our country, but internationally. It becomes a financial instrument, and they make money from you being in prison, not just because they're slave labor and you're cleaning roads or planting flowers or whatever it is, which they're starting to use more, which I don't have a problem with somebody if they legitimately need to be in prison, that they there's got to be a repay of some kind, and that's a whole other subject, but they make huge billions of dollars across the country with every person that they put in prison. You know, you've got an ounce of marijuana, you go to jail, you're in prison for 5 years, they make, who knows, they probably make hundreds of thousands, if not $1 million or $2 million on that one person. It's the corporate money-making beast. And we have
the biggest purveyor of prisoner bonds is Merrill Lynch, and most of them are sold to China. We did an entire expose on that here 2 years ago. They are actually selling prisoner bonds, and then you've got this I can't remember what the name. It's corporate prisons, is what it is. Corporate correctional prison systems or some such name. It's a corporation that's moving through each state, buying up state prisons. And I'm sorry, a private corporation has no business in dealing with prisoners. They just have no business in doing this. And yet we are selling our prisons and prisoners off to them. And you're absolutely right. The prisoner bond sales are huge. They are massive. But this goes back again to Ashcroft in his sentencing guidelines. This was the groundwork for this, to make it a lucrative business. And this is where he said, you know, if you have an ounce of marijuana, you get 5 years. You shouldn't have gotten any time at all, because who in the hell cares? But you get 5 years. So they've guaranteed to the bond seller that you're going to be in that institution 5 years. and what are you worth? So now the federal money comes, the state money comes, and you know the bonds are sold. It is the most sickening, disgusting thing among many things that goes on in this country. Jeff,
yep.
When you first encountered your fiasco there with the IRS, what was their response when you stood up and said no? I mean, when you basically challenged them on what they were saying, what was their response to that?
Oh, it's pretty typical. You know, when you get into these circles, you know, it goes back to you know, some of the pioneers that was that were, you know, starting to understand this. See, the only way that we've been able to understand this and unravel this is because of, number one, computers, number two, the internet. And when you have a computer that can actually access, and it all started with educational systems, that's where the internet started, and then moved to government, and now it's out to the masses, to their chagrin, unfortunately, you can actually do what would take any one of us, and did literally back in the past, years to research. You know, you have to go in and you have to read. You read a book, you read law books, and you read and you read and you read. Whereas in today's, you know, society and with our technology, you can literally do a search and do what somebody might have taken months to do in 20 minutes. And so you are able to start to piece this together, and when you multiply that by thousands or tens of thousands of people across the country individually, it all started out that way because it's, you know, grassroots is usually where everything starts, and all of a sudden people are realizing, wait a minute. And then as that went and they were able to access the internet and they started putting this out, Irwin Schiff, Peter Schiff's father, Peter Schiff is a well-known financial guru, right on the mark on pretty much everything that he talks about. His father is the one that, at least to some degrees, pioneered attacks against the IRS and the fraud and everything. He's in prison right now, and he's 80, I don't remember how old he is. He's 80-some-odd years old. He may end up dying there, which is what I'm trying to do with you know, my case with the IRS and in the Supreme Court, because this has never been adjudicated, and one of my top number one remedy for the court and what have you, if this goes, is that anybody that's in prison because of IRS and because of that fraud and stuff is going to be immediately released, and he will be one of the ones, because he's one of the ones that I learned from, and there's been, you know, dozens of other documents and books and people that have gone forward, and people that they're not just sitting in prison. Some of them have literally, as we talked about the last time, Joe Bannister, Vernice Kugelin, Woody Harrell, which we talked about earlier, had acquittals because the IRS could not answer the basic question that they are trying to shove down our throats, and we all have to just stop this craziness, this sheeple stuff, you know, like lemmings going over the cliff. You've got to go over this cliff because we order you to do it. Well, no, I don't. And, you know, they've intimidated us, and they've created a fear factor that it inhibits most people from acting. You know, it's like, well, no, I've got to file my 1040. Well, it's a voluntary form, okay? You want to volunteer that you have, like we mentioned, income, and that you're a federal employee, go ahead. You're committing perjury, by the way, if you have any conscience of lying. But you don't have most people don't have income, as we stated. So, you know, that's what I'm trying to do, and as I mentioned, I talked with a guy today that has a pretty powerful group of people that are ready. They're working on various things, and I was kind of shocked when I heard that they have three primary focuses, and they stated that one of them was my case because it's so significant, and it's in the front of the you know, Supreme Court, But unfortunately, you know, all these guys that do these things, they have deep pockets, they have, you know, and it costs money. And as I've stated earlier, it's just like, you know, and I can't stand money, I can't stand finances. I would prefer to not have to deal with them in any way, shape, or form, but that's the nature of the beast. And, it, you know, the bottom line of that is, this has something to do with every man, woman, and child in this country, and they know that. And I realize that, you know, for whatever fortuitous reasons that, you know, you could come up with, there's a means here now, right now. I mean, we're at a crossroads here to put this right in their face and show them how they have been derelict and how they are violating their own rules and their own laws and their own statutes and everything else. And it's going to be something that they will have to answer, at least in some degree, because if they don't, then I'd say everybody better lock their doors and be ready, because we're in big trouble. So he's got a huge contact list, and he's putting out some emails to everybody to, you know, try to solicit donations and what have you to go towards this cause of the, you know, because it's all of a sudden it's taken me from, you know, where I thought I was to, you know, $350 for the court cost or the docket cost, and with the documentation for having to redo pretty much everything and doing it in book form. I mean, literally, you have to have a book printed to go to the Supreme Court. And not only that, but not only the original, but you have to have 40 copies of the exact same book. And it might take, you know, it could take, you know, $50, $100. I don't have any clue what it's going to cost for even one to do it. So it's like all of a sudden, oh, man, you know, and that's their ploy, you know, money. Oh, too bad. You don't have the money. Sorry, you lose.
Go ahead, Jeff. Well, what I was going to say, we talked earlier about the federal government actually being a corporation, having been incorporated in 1871. But the Supreme Court is also a corporation. And every alphabet agency of the federal government, everything they've created, is all a subcorporation of the parent, the United States, the USA, the United States of America,
right.
Corporation. And the Supreme Court, along with the federal government and all these agencies, are listed on Dun & Bradstreet. They're all carrying a Dun's number stating their creditworthiness, and they all have investors. Now, I want to know, Jeff, who's investing in our Supreme Court and for what purpose? But when you understand that, you now understand why when Monsanto came in front of them and Judge Thomas did not recuse himself, a former attorney for Monsanto who is still heavily invested in Monsanto, and yet he was allowed to sit and help render the ruling against the people in favor of Monsanto, you understand that the system is at work. This is one of their corporate investors. They're making money off of this corporation and their ties to it. And I've said this before, I'll say it again, I think the whole court system needs to be just totally wiped clean. Not that it's ever going to happen, but I believe it should. And we should start with the Supreme Court. I think it has proven, especially in the last 10 years, to be such a threat to the people and the Constitution of the United States. They have one mandate and one mandate only, and that is to consider the laws brought before them in comparison to the Constitution. Is the law constitutional? It's the only mandate they have, and yet they run outside of this all the time. Are you familiar with William Windsor? He runs Lawless America website. He sued and got in front of the Supreme Court over the federal court system, the district court system in Atlanta, about the corruption there. And he got his case, he had two of them, got them both in front of the Supreme Court, and he asked the court two questions. One, were they going to do anything about the known corruption in that district, and their opinion on that was that the corruption in the lower courts and the lawbreaking was of no concern of theirs. The second question he asked was, is the Constitution, in fact, still in force? They sealed their ruling and let out only a few statements, one of which was that the courts, the judges, may do whatever they think they need to do, whatever suits them, basically, and the Constitution be damned. If it went against the Constitution, state or federal, too bad. But they sealed the rest of their ruling, and they will not make it public. So I take that, Jeff, to mean that, no, the Constitution is not enforced. We just don't want to admit it publicly for fear of civil revolt. I'm just always stunned. Like our kids in school, they're not taught anything about the judiciary. They're not taught anything about how the government is supposed to work, what the government is now currently involved in that it should not be. They are not taught anything. The civics class is not civics, not like I learned it. And even then, and that's been many years ago, compared to what I know now, we were taught virtually nothing. As it is now, they're taught absolutely nothing. And do you think maybe one of the remedies for this would be to maybe force an education in this? How can we bring these kids out of school with absolutely no knowledge about how things actually work, how they're actually supposed to be, and then get mad at them because they don't see that anything's wrong? Did I make sense there? I mean,
I mean, education obviously is the key. Actually, in our community here, there's been some slight movement to trying to get the president or the principal of the local school, and it's just one local high school, it's a small community, to start to educate people. But you're right. I mean, it's been a dumbing down since the 50s, slowly perverting and changing this. The court system itself has been perverted. In fact, in many cases, and especially like with this IRS case, the court systems have been deceived as badly as the rest of us, because it's presuming, certain things, presuming what income is, presuming that you're a taxpayer. The courts themselves are corporate courts. They are not common law courts. The common law courts, Article III courts, were established to take care of all these type of things. And common law and Article III courts, most of us don't really understand any of that, but a common law court is if you do something to damage somebody, okay, you're liable. It's not 60 million statutes there. It's very small. It's very basic. Okay, is there an injured party? If you're driving down the road and you're in a 65 mile per hour zone and you're going 75 and somebody pulls you over and gives you a ticket for that, the question would be, okay, where's the injured party? Who was damaged in this process?
Yes.
You know, when you come down to freedom and you come down to the common law things, it's a matter of personal responsibility. If you're driving, 65 or 75 into 65, and there's not a person in sight, and it's 12 at midnight, you could do that for, 6 hours and not come across a soul and not even another vehicle in a lot of places. Was there any crime committed? Was there any harm done? Was there any damage? No, there wasn't. So it boils down to us realizing, wait a minute, maybe I should hit the start button on my brain and, realize that, wait a minute, they have put me in a cage, they have put me into a matrix, and they have given me all these rules and regulations, and they are supposed to be the servant. So it'd be like you've got, you know, a household and whatever, and you hire somebody to help you with the kids, to help you with the garden, to help you with the landscape, whatever it is, and all of a sudden they come in and they throw down, a list of 60 million statutes to you and say, oh, by the way, I'm in charge now, and here's what you have to do. And yes, of course, you have to keep paying me. So it's a total...
Jeff, the thing is, these people that get into these positions, and I talked about this earlier, something happens in their heads. They quickly leave the I am employed by you position to I am all powerful over you. And people too many times have had the hammer brought down on them by people who are breaking the law. One of the things I have a great deal of trouble with is the Supreme Court ruled in a case here about 5 years ago that it is all right for police to lie to you if it helps them in their job. But it is not all right for you to lie to the police. And I got a problem with that. You know, it's all right. The Indiana Supreme Court, issued that ruling that the police, even under exigent, meaning unreasonable circumstances, could break into your house without a warrant if they thought they had reason to believe you might be committing a crime. And thankfully, the state legislature of Indiana came back and kicked that one to the road. They passed a law that said, no, you cannot. They specifically stated that the police do not have the right, without warrant and without evidence, to break into your home, to enter your home. But this is what I'm saying. These things happen, and people sit there. This dumbing down, I don't think, begins to describe it. It's like they're brain dead.
Yeah, it's – I mean, that's a – to me, it has to do with education. The Bible says my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Lack of knowledge has killed probably hundreds of millions of people simply because they didn't realize that, should I be pouring the waste that we just, put into our canisters in our house, this day into the streets? Or should I, it's just basic, that was basic hygiene knowledge. And the knowledge killed, that was the responsible for the bubonic plague. So it's like, wait a minute. Knowledge is something that we have to seek it. We're living in a microcosm, all of us. It's a matrix. If you've ever seen the movie The Matrix, the second, third, forget it. The first one, if you look at that and you follow it, these guys were so right on what's happening. It's a science fiction, of course. We're not sitting in some tube or something, but the very concept of the fact that a matrix of behavior has been created for us, and we're walking around, we're doing all this, and we're thinking we're free, and we're thinking, this, that, and the other thing, when in fact we are complying with the matrix parameters that says this is what you're going to do, this is how you're going to do it. And when Neo was, somebody came up and knocked on him and said, hey, Neo, wake up. That's what we're trying to do, is we're going up to people and saying, wake up. Do you realize, it's like a giant. When World War II, before World War II started and they attacked Pearl Harbor, the emperor, once they did, the emperor, stated, I fear that we have awoken a sleeping giant. And we are the giant, the people of this country, and we have completely, totally, at least, 99% forgotten who we are and what we are, and that's the fear that the government has, because they have us so convolutedly entrapped in our statutes and in, well, we have to do this, and I have to pay for a driver's license every, you know, renew it, and I've got to do my registration, and I've got to, you know, because the servants are telling me that I have to do this. You know, we've forgotten that we are the master, and we've got to get away from this craziness. And, you know, a point I did want to make, which goes back to the IRS question, you know, they're trying to tax you and me and every one of us on our income. So you get, you know, $1,000 a month income that they classify as income. They look at that and they say, okay, that's taxable right off the top. Well, the Supreme Court recently, you know, a couple years ago, declared corporations as persons. So my take, and I'm going to bring this up to them wherever I can, is if that's the case, well, then that means that the corporations, they don't have their deductions. They can't deduct their costs. They can't deduct their expenses or anything like that. They have to be taxed right from the top, just like all of us are through their system. So you don't think that that's going to raise some eyebrows and from the corporate world, you know, to say, well, wait a minute, I just spent, you know, Microsoft spends, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars on expenses. If they can't deduct any of that, those expenses from, well, probably more than that. I bet it's probably $500 million that they spend on expenses. If all of a sudden they're declared as persons and they're the same as us, they can't deduct any expenses until they pay their taxes. Well, guess what? We just opened a whole other can of worms.
I don't understand. Well, I do from a political global standpoint. This thing, this love affair with corporations that cause so much damage to economies around the world, to countries around the world. And this globalization thing is going to be the death of all of us. The IRS, of course, is supposed to be expanding into other areas, using their model to set up in countries where we've been doing nation building, like Iraq and Afghanistan and so on, so that taxes can be collected from other people. Jeff, we've got about 2 minutes here. Will you give our listeners your websites and any contact information you want out there?
I would give them the website Foundation for Truth in Law, all one word, Foundation for the word for, F-O-R, truthinlaw.org. And they can go there and get information on my case, and they can actually read the case, because that's the key, is if people read what the courts have ruled on the income, on the IRS, on all these type of things, they can, all it takes is just realizing, wait a minute, okay, I don't have information, and yes, it's scary. Believe me, I've been through fear for a long time, up and down, but if they look at that, they can get the case and they can read it. And if anybody's so inclined to help with this, because this is going to be something that affects every man, woman, and child in this country, they can, you know, put a donation into, you know, the opportunity that's there on the website. Go to PayPal and just send it to donations at foundationfortruthinlaw.org. It all goes to fight this case, and ideally, I've been trying to do this for a number of years, is get some donations to fund people like me, to fund people like anybody out there that's fighting a case. Doesn't matter if it's a property tax case, doesn't matter if it's foreclosure, doesn't matter if it's a driver's license. We will be able to start going after these guys with the law and with the remedy that we are gaining by the day on some pretty powerful stuff.
Well, Jeff, I want to thank you for coming on the show, and I'm so sorry about the difficulties in getting connected, and thank you for continuing to try till you did get hooked up. We're going to be revisiting this with Jeff, hopefully here in the near future, to keep track of what's happening with this case. I'm out of time, folks, so we will see you tomorrow. We have you from Montana coming on the show. That's 7 o'clock Central. Talk to you later. Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Good night.